Welcome back to another episode of CyberStar Talks podcast. I am Ayona. As always, I am so thrilled you're spending your precious time with me and my honored guest. I'm thrilled to have Ryan Marston with us today. Ryan is a remarkable 17-year-old cybersecurity geek specializing in automotive security. Not only has he authored and published 3 books at such a young age, but he also has some more in the pipeline. You can find his books on Amazon named Black Hat Go Manual, Game Hackers Field Manual, and Black Hat Python Manual. Ryan has a passion for reverse engineering, web exploitation, and exploit developments. I was literally blown away when I first met him. What sets Ryan apart is that he created a whole new programming language by himself named Skyline, which he actively uses to craft exploits. Beyond his technical prowess, Ryan is committed to sharing his knowledge through presentations, classes, and community engagement, particularly focusing on helping young enthusiasts and adults navigate their path in the cybersecurity field. For those interested in learning more about Ryan's contributions, simply Google his username, Totally Not a Hexer, to discover more information about him. Ryan, it's an honor to have you here today. Thank you for joining me.
Hi, yes, thank you. It's actually quite a pleasure to be here.
How did you first become interested in the cybersecurity field?
That is a common theme I get, and it's probably one of the best stories to tell. But the long story short, when I was in about sixth grade, I had a friend who brought me into or introduced me to the game hacking realm as like a way to make quicker money. And from there, it kind of just shot my passion after learning, being able to dissect computers and games and programs, learn how they work and write exploits for them, or help develop exploits, really shot my interest into this realm.
Well, that's quite early. And when did you start working in cybersecurity?
I got my real like first job when I was 15, but it really didn't start at actual full built companies until I was just turned 16 about.
You're currently doing multiple jobs, like conducting extensive research, writing books and articles. It's an impressive feat. I'm curious to know how many hours you dedicate to work each day.
Oh man, that way too much, I can say. I definitely put it over my school, which they don't like so much. So I'm probably only getting about like rough 4 hours of school each day. And I'll spend, I'd say roughly 10 hours a day working. If you include personal projects, then pretty much all day.
What is it about the cybersecurity field that ignites such passion within you? So what are your goals driving this relentless pursuit of knowledge and achievement?
Yeah, so the passion comes from a really deep reason to solve problems. Because really, when we look at problems from a much more technical standpoint, we can dissect them in all these different paths. And even then, the most amazing part about it is it's the science of it. It's like, even if we find a possible conclusion now, in the future, there's someone else who will also be able to contradict this and make a new conclusion, making it very flexible and making me want to dive deep into it. And through that passion, I can elevate it to continue my road path into discovering or building new network protocols or technologies that might be advancements of existing technologies.
Ryan, you've built a programming language named Skyline. Could you walk us through the process of building it?
Yeah, it was a pretty, so Skyline isn't a bytecode compiled language yet, so it's still a very basic interpreted programming language. It is built using Go, and the reason I chose Go is because the whole purpose of the language was to be very fast, well-oriented, and very flexible with a lot of unique toolkits for offensive developers or exploits developers, which Go all had in hand. And pretty much the process started out within the first day I did it. I did the lexing process, which was picking apart plain text data in source files, and then parsing it, which I built my own parser for, and even building my own abstract syntax tree, and finally evaluation step through actually within all that same day.
What are the specific features that makes it unique or particularly suited to your needs?
Yeah, so at the time I was doing a lot of file forensics. I was picking apart IoT devices and writing a lot of private exploits for any flaws I discovered in existing systems. And I couldn't really stick with trusting, as odd as it may sound, trusting programming languages that were already out there for offensive development. Plus, I didn't really like the design of a lot of pre-existing libraries and stuff that exists for exploit development. So I said, whatever, I might as well make it my own. And plus, I think it's pretty cool to tell people I write exploits using my own language.
Absolutely. That's really interesting. And talking about the tools you use, could you share what compiler and interpreter you utilize for this language?
Yeah, so I really just, ever, since everything was built on my own, it was all built from scratch. I use just the Go programming language and it rides entirely off of the standard library of Go.
Wow, that's impressive. Now let's delve into a captivating aspect of gaming culture, the game cheats. For our listeners who might not be familiar with the topic, could you explain what game cheats are and how do they work?
Ooh, for sure, yeah. So game cheats on the base level are different at the code level. They're these exploits that take advantage of flaws in the game to customize a specific client's gameplay to be much more enhanced. This can be whether to see characters through walls or pick up items from across a map, kill people, or really just crash servers, even if the exploits really go deep enough, which is a whole nother realm to get into. Yeah, that's pretty much the basis, and it's probably one of the biggest markets out there. There's a lot of popular game cheats, and there's even some people that spend their entire lives doing it.
And what motivates players to use cheats? What are some of the most common types of cheats?
So from one of the things that actually got me into that was trying to figure out why people did use cheats. From both selling them and making game cheats for various popular games, I have kind of concluded that a lot of people just want to buy or use cheats to ruin a specific person's day as like a form of social engineering through a computer. It's pretty funny to think about, but a lot of them all just would buy the cheat. They would drop their YouTube channel or Twitch links and then say, we're gonna live stream snipe this XYZ YouTuber for as long as he's streaming until he just rage quits because it's funny to watch him rage. And I was like, wow, these people are like all in it for social engineering purposes.
Can you shed some light on the potential impact of cheats on the gaming experience and the industry as a whole?
I mean, I think for a lot of people, especially when you look at most games that or companies and groups that hold tournaments and stuff, it can be very detrimental. And coming from a professional standpoint, it's really not that much of something that shouldn't be looked at. I think I worded that horribly, but my way of saying, like, for competitions and stuff, it can really ruin the moment because you have these competitors, these real talent, these real people that are supposed to perform, and someone with no talent comes in and makes it unfair, and no one gets to see the talent, no one gets to practice their skills or do anything the way it's supposed to be or even have a good time. So it kind of ruins the mood for a lot of professional players. Even same with a basic community. I've heard countless stories of how people have thrown their controllers in the wall because they died of a cheater.
Exactly. Let's talk about drones. Have you ever managed to hack a drone?
Not physically. I did manage to get a hold of some firmware and stuff that had some basic vulnerabilities in it. I did take advantage of. I got a few friends too that even helped guide me through it, but never directly hacked the drone itself, more than just exploited a few flaws in the root firmware.
What do you think are the biggest risks or concerns with drone hacking?
Probably frequency related attacks. When you look at the drone hacking world, the aerospace world as a whole, a lot of these devices or drones, ranging from civilian all the way to military, use a lot and a lot of radio protocols. If these protocols aren't secure enough, then it can cause a lot of damage to the drone itself, and there can be a lot of bad things that can happen with it, such as dropping out of the sky or making a whole plethora of issues. So, unlike standard flaws, I would definitely say that their radio weaknesses are the most prominent and more detrimental.
Do you think modern cars are flawed in terms of security controls? I mean, is it possible to break into the autonomous car system and gain control of the vehicle?
I mean, in all, it really depends on how the vehicle was engineered. We have a lot of good prime examples of infotainment systems and even systems like OnStar that face vulnerabilities. And when they're exploited, depending on where the system was designed or what system it was tied to in the vehicle, will all depend on the outcome. If the call system is tied to, say, some environmental controls or something with the infotainment system that may be deeply rooted to other potential systems in the vehicle that are pretty complex or important, then I would definitely say that that would be a pretty critical thing to look at.
And since you are highly experienced in this topic, what are the most prominent vulnerabilities you've discovered in this realm?
So from out of all of the research, all the talks I've looked at and stuff I've attended, a lot of them seem to be in key fobs, similar to a lot of the radio vulnerabilities I would mention when I was talking about drones. It's kind of the same thing. I've also seen numerous times a ton of people target infotainment systems, find a lot of web-based vulnerabilities because they're pretty much just web applications sitting on a device. A lot of radio stuff and I would say a lot of stuff with the infotainment systems, even on the hardware level, it's kind of all over the place for me to pinpoint.
When it comes to web security and reverse engineering in vehicles, how do those fields mesh together?
Well, we can look at cars as like one big box of IoT devices. I mean, you have an infotainment system, you have a cellular network, a Wi-Fi network, and then you have other units in the vehicle that may also have other digital meanings to them. And when we look at it like this, we can say that, let's say, Android reverse engineering, for example, if you can get a hold of the APK files that are used within the infotainment console, then you're probably going to be analyzing APK files and reverse engineering the system services or anything that may be of interest to you, especially when it comes to protocols or anything that's proprietary, such as a file format that's also stored on the console or other major components of the vehicle.
Ryan, with all the background and information you have, you could basically become a very successful black hat hacker and be super rich if you wanted to. What motivates you to stay on the side of ethical hacking despite the temptation and opportunities that might exist in the darker realms of cybersecurity?
Coming from the personal experience I've had, even working unethically in the past, I think that the ultimate goal all the time for me was just research and research and develop something that is going to genuinely help humanity, because I kind of felt that there was no other reason as to why I was here. And if that was going to follow me as far as a passion, then passion would be the element and money would not be the end goal. I didn't really need money or anything to drive me, even as much as it is a necessity it is. It's not something that has driven me and never was. The end goal was always, let's see how I can do this better. Let's improve. Let's constantly learn and evolve and never stop learning.
That's a very noble cause. How do you feel when you hang out with your friends who might not have the in-depth knowledge you have about cybersecurity? Do they consider you a nerd and try to exclude you from their circle? Or do they get inspired by you and attempt to break into the field too?
As much as I'm surprised, I've had a very, very large amount of personal friends I've met that have all decided to call me delusional for some of the things that I think about or do, such as like building my own language or something like that, or call me different names and do try to exclude me. But however, recently here, there's been about four or five people I've met personally, which to my surprise are very rare that I hang out with, but all of them, every single time they talk to me, say they feel inspired. And that is my only goal. My goal has never been to try and be the smartest person in the room or try to even show off to people,
Exactly.
because I
Then you'd be in
believe,
the wrong room.
exactly. And I believe that's like putting people down. So when I see that my friends do say they take inspiration from me, I'm like, man, that's really cool. And I want to keep doing that. So we end up like talking for hours and hours on the same topic.
That's awesome. What do your female friends think about cybersecurity? Are they scared of it or are they interested in learning more?
For Kit, I've actually never met a lot of female friends outside of outside of cybersecurity, but for the ones that I have just in tech as whole, they all say that they're pretty interested to it. Even some of the ones in like mechatronics engineering, every time I post something, there's always that one person that's like, "Ooh, I want to learn more." And to my surprise, it is those mechatronics engineers and stuff that I meet.
Looking ahead, where do you envision yourself in the next decade? Do you see yourself continuing to push the boundaries of cybersecurity, perhaps leading groundbreaking research or pioneering innovative solutions in cybersecurity?
I actually do see myself there. There's been a lot of times in my career where I've thought like maybe cybersecurity wasn't it for me, but as a flip of a switch in my career happened, I started getting closer and closer to these groundbreaking research papers, being a part of these amazing teams, and even being what I'm now a part of the Car Hacking Village, which is pretty cool. And I see myself being there doing and executing that dream of just helping people and continuing to either lead research or help people complete their research.
Ryan, you're a brilliant mind. I'm amazed by your in-depth knowledge in cybersecurity and your creativity. And you already have deliverables at such a young age, a whole new programming language and 3 books. What you have achieved is really big. You might have more knowledge in certain topics than many other cybersecurity experts who have years of experience. And this is power. Please utilize this power for the benefit of society and inspire more people to explore this field. I love to see younger generation taking the courage and diving into cybersecurity and do great things to make the world a safer place. And you're truly a role model. Thank you for being in this show today.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to CyberStar Talks podcast. If you like what you heard, please follow us, leave a review, and tune in monthly for the upcoming episodes.